Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, this is your boy, G-Ski Rocks. And this is going out to the lovely, lovely women of the world. I know sometimes you have to make a hard decision, but I want you to think about this.
I want you to know that they're precious human life.
Just
This is Letitia Wong. Welcome to Pro Life Fridays Radio. And I want to wish everybody a wonderful 2013. And I'm just going to announce to everybody, it is me solo today. My co-hosts have had some life changes. Thomas, if you're listening out there, how are you? Happy New Year. Thomas is taking a bit of a leave of absence himself, as I kind of went on vacation too for the last couple of weeks. Thomas is in a state of changing his place of residence. He found a new job, which I congratulate him for. Thank God for. Hope he stays safe, and I hope that works out for you all. I know that you're listening for a little bit, so Thomas, I know that you're listening. I wish you the best. I pray for the best. And also, and again, Melissa is out on maternity leave, and we will get her back when she is ready to come back, when the baby is born. Looking forward to it. But I'd like to welcome everybody to the show. It is time for our scripture for our show. Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 19. I call heaven and earth as witnesses today against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life, that both you and your descendants may live. And that's Deuteronomy 30, verse 19. Our Heavenly Father, I dedicate this show to you in honor of just so many things, but the most important thing being the life that you created on this world. And as we come, as we begin a new year, let us not forget where we just came from, which is celebration of the birth of Jesus Christ, your Son, who was just like us at one time an unborn child. And if we can love and respect that unborn child who grew up to be a man and the Savior of the world, Lord, please give us the heart and the conscience to love all the children that you have created in the womb at the time they are alive right now. So I dedicate this show and all of our shows in honor of the life you created. Please bless our listeners. Please bless this host on my solo day here. And I pray and I thank you for the opportunity. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Well, if you are listening, again, happy 2013. As with many New Years, I wish a happy New Year. But 2013 also reminds us of one important thing. It is, in 2013, just several weeks away, the 40th anniversary of the Roe versus Wade decision of the Supreme Court of the United States. And while I wish everybody a happy and healthy and prosperous 2013, I also want to remind our audience that it is 40 years for the legalized death of the unborn in this country. And it has been the crusade, and pardon me if you don't like that I use that word, but I'm going to use that word, of pro-life people of conscience to reverse that decision through any legal means possible so that we don't sanction in this country, we do not legally sanction any longer the mass slaughter and the mass murder of innocent people in the womb. That is the point, and that is the legacy of Roe v. Wade, which has to be overturned in one way, shape, or form in our laws. So I want to talk about three things in particular. It's going to be a shorter show because it depends on how quickly I get through all of these points. If you want to call in and comment and join me on the air, the number to call is 760-542-3907. I would love to hear from you. If you want to ask a question, if you want to make a comment, please join us on the air, or join me on the air. So let's start off with, the fiscal cliff and this whole nightmare called Obamacare, and that has happened. I have to tell people, since the 2012 elections, which was back in November, on November 6th, I have deliberately not paid too close attention to the news and the politics coming out from Washington, D.C. Not only is it because, the time period between November and today, which was the ending of, was it today or yesterday? The last day of the lame duck session. It was a complete lame duck session for me because everything that happened between November and today, I just did not want to pay attention to, did not matter, I just didn't want to hear it because we are just descending down the slippery slope into a socialist nightmare in more ways than one. And I don't want to deal with it. I just put it in a basket and just shove it in a closet. I do not want to hear about it. However, something and nothing happened until this week, where the Republican Party in the House of Representatives decided to just throw away all the opportunity and all the leverage that they had with the liberal Democrats establishment, both in the White House and the Senate, and just buckle and decide, let's just give all these Democrats the spending that they want, make no cuts, and just negotiate about numbers. And while that may seem like that's just politics as usual, this time, this politics as usual has a very significant impact on the American people, and it does for those making less than the magic number of $450,000 a year. Why that's a magic number, I have no idea. It isn't supposedly those who make $359,999 a year are so much worse off than those making $450,000 a year. And somehow $450,000 is a magic number where you're just okay and you can pay higher taxes and it won't bother you at all. Is it true? Now, remember in 2008, candidate Barack Obama had campaigned on the idea that he was not going to raise taxes on the American middle class, not one dime. Sound familiar? Does that sound familiar? Not one dime. If I wanted to keep my insurance, I could keep my insurance. If I wanted to keep my doctor, I could keep my doctor. If I wanted to, basically, if my medical condition, my state of health care, I liked what I had, I could keep it. Well, Obamacare was passed, and all these promises were made that nothing would change about what I liked about my health care. Is that true? No, it's not. Let me give you an example, a personal example of how things are changed. I've got two major things happening to our family in particular that is changing on account of our wonderful president and his wonderful Obamacare, and I say that most facetiously. First thing, my insurance, my health care insurance that I had enjoyed through my husband's employer had given us a decent rate, a decent plan, where our expenses were covered under a flexible spending account that we could have tax-free. And we had just to pay a copay, where our insurance company paid the balance or whatever they would cover. Under our new plan, now mind you, I liked our old plan, and apparently I couldn't keep it. So even though I liked it, President Obama, I could not keep it because it does not exist anymore for us. We wanted to pay low premiums again, or the employer-sponsored nearly free, where they paid a majority of the fee, where other parts of his paycheck, my husband's paycheck, would go to offset the cost of the employer paying for the health care insurance. Anyway, long story short, the new plan that we have has us paying a good deal more. By how much more? We are paying the cost of what it would be to privately insure ourselves for an entire year, to the tune of $5,000 to $6,000 in premiums. But it's not a premium, it's actual health care. Above which, if we spend that much, or if we need to spend that much, then the insurance company will kick in some compensation for that, and not at 100% until even more money is spent. But let me go back to the beginning. So, for our household, we will have to spend the equivalent of buying an insurance policy without having to buy an insurance policy in order to cover our health care costs in full. So what does that mean on a practical level for me? It is as if I don't have any insurance at all until I spend a certain amount of money, say close to $6,000 in a year. Oh, well, that's really different from how we've had our insurance in the past. It's not the same insurance policy that I had before. So what does this mean when I go to the pharmacy or when I go to the doctor? There is no copay. I pay out of pocket, up front, for every visit, full price. Every prescription, full price. And I will get reimbursed pre-tax dollars from a health savings account that we are putting our own money into in order to pay for this. Of course, numbers, you can trade numbers all day long. Ultimately, those dollars come from a health savings account, which I don't oppose. I don't oppose that at all. A health savings account that we make available, that was made available for us, has some compensation given to us from the employer, which is good. And overall, it's a good plan. However, that's not the point. The point is, I liked my insurance company. I mean, I liked my insurance policy. And now that policy doesn't exist. Thank you very much, federal government. Thank you very much, Obamacare, which, by the way, applies to everybody, that I am now, under any plan, paying for federally funded abortions. As a pro-life person of conscience, I am actively searching for a way around this. So don't be, so those of you who are listening, you know, what am I going to do about that? I'm trying to find a way. The legalese on these policies is just through the roof, and I'm trying to find a way. So when I find that way, I will take it. How to find, if that means going off insurance completely and buying my own private policy, that's really no different than what I'm doing right now, which is paying upfront for. So, what does this have to do with the fiscal cliff? Second thing that's happening in our home is that our taxes are going up by a lot of dimes, a lot of dimes. It was a news report just came out yesterday. I believe that the average income of those making less than $100,000 will go up. The taxes, the federal taxes, because of the end of the payroll tax deduction. Or did I say that right? The raising of the payroll tax, let me say that. Because of the raising of the payroll tax, the average under $100,000 wage earner will have to pay an additional $1,500 to $2,000 in taxes a year. That's you, that's me, that's everybody who makes less than $100,000. That's a lot of people. I don't know about you, but that $1,500 that I usually get back in a tax refund is just going to vaporize. Poof. Now, I don't often say what I do with that money, but a lot of times that money goes to car repairs, home repairs, healthcare, offset other healthcare costs, buying things that we need. I ain't taking no vacation on that tax refund. I haven't. I have never. I don't know how many people do. Some people do. But more often than not, Americans who receive a tax refund from the federal government use it because they need it for necessary home repairs, car repairs, things that they otherwise wouldn't be able to afford. And that's just going to vaporize, not just on me, but on everybody making less than $100,000. Thank you. Thanks a lot. And I can't just thank the Democrats. I have to thank the Republicans for that, for the increase in taxes. Now, as a conservative, I have said for a long time, and I believe this is true, that higher taxes on the individual citizen doesn't help the individual citizen. It just takes their money, redistributes it to a bunch of politicians who spend it any way they please. And we all know about government waste, and we all know about government spending money on things that are not good for this country. And even for you Democrats out there who don't like the idea of the government spending money on the military and war and all this stuff, and even if the government cuts funding for our national defense to our military, that money is still going to be spent on our military, whether you like it or not. So when the government raises taxes on you, even you Democrats, it is spending money on things that you do not like. Why would you elect people who would spend more of it? Because it goes to things you don't support. This is the idea of conservative limited government. That the people retain more control of their own dollars in their pockets, in their bank accounts, and less of it goes to Washington to be spent by other people to buy things that you don't necessarily support. This is why we don't want taxes to become burdensome to the American people. We don't want them raised, because every time Washington raises taxes, that's more money they get to decide what to spend on, not you. All right. So that's the end of that. The most shocking thing this week that I read was just the Time magazine's cover story. And it is shocking. It says on the cover, Time magazine, and it shows this exam table. I guess it's a birthing chair. It's not like one that I particularly sat in. I guess it could be. But the words on the Time magazine cover, in honor of Roe v. Wade, says 40 years ago, abortion rights activists won an epic victory with Roe v. Wade. And in bigger words underneath, it says they've been losing ever since. I was shocked by this. I really was. I was shocked by the cover because not that they would, that, I mean, I knew, everybody knows, that the abortion, the pro-abortion argument has been losing ever since Roe v. Wade. Remember, America, that the decision to legalize abortion in America was not a decision made by the American public. You didn't have a conversation with anybody before it was decided. I didn't have a conversation with anybody before it was decided. Nobody in America had that conversation, was able to debate the merits of legalization before it became legal because five or six Americans decided in favor of legalized abortion in Roe v. Wade. Let me correct that. They decided that abortion could not be made illegal by any state in the United States. And that's how we come to think of abortion in America as being legalized. Didn't actually legalize abortion so much as Roe v. Wade made it impossible for a state to pass a law declaring that abortion within that state was illegal. Had America had the chance to debate this openly, I don't believe Roe v. Wade would have ever passed, would have ever gotten the kind of judicial support that it did. Not back in 1973. Today, if Roe v. Wade came up to a vote today, if it was just 30 years delayed and we had today's political climate on abortion and the Supreme Court of today had to decide, oh, they would decide for it. Yes, I believe they would. Over and against the conscience and the debate that would be happening, if it were happening for the last 40 years, over and against the public opinion that exists today. It was Ruth Bader Ginsburg herself that had said that Roe v. Wade was decided on a legal basis wrongly. It was wrongly decided. But the only reason why it doesn't get overturned is because of some kind of feminist ideal that she has in her mind that women can't get along in this world without abortion. Now, it's a completely different question on whether or not abortion should be legal. Whether or not the case of Jane Roe v. Wade was a good case to bring to the Supreme Court. And now we know 40 years later, we knew a long time ago that this was not about a woman's right to choose. It was based on a false premise that a woman who was gang raped should have the ability, if she got pregnant by rape, to be able to abort the child. How that became 40 years later, abortion without limits, abortion without apology, abortion without reason, without any necessary reason or conditions, is just horrendous. Horrendous how Roe v. Wade has green-lighted the argument for abortion. Now, look at what has become of the abortion debate since Roe v. Wade. Pro-abortionists like NARAL and NOW and Planned Parenthood, they don't talk about what if a woman needs abortion in case of rape. That's the last thing. That is the last thing they talk about. What do they talk about instead? a woman's right to choose to end the life of her child for any reason she deems necessary. It could be that she doesn't feel like being pregnant anymore, all the way to, yes, maybe the baby is a result of rape. And every excuse in between. The child has a deformity. The child has a genetic disability. The child has Down syndrome. The child is one of quadruplets that were implanted during the process of in vitro fertilization. Any reason whatsoever. That has become the hallmark of the pro-abortion argument. They have signs that say abortion without conditions or apology. That is the nature of pro-abortion sentiment today. Now, you're going to get some of them that hem and haw and say, oh, well, you know, we've got some really good reasons, blah, 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 blah. But, okay, so let's just pass some laws that limit abortion to those reasons. And what happens? Oh, they come out strongly against those things. And what do they say? No, a woman has a right to choose. It's none of your business why she wants to abort. Oh, but you can't have it both ways, but they are. But it's taken 40 freaking years to point that out. And I'm going to point it out over and over again until the public understands the double-minded talk from pro-abortionists, pro-deathers, because they are for, not only are they're pro-women, they're not pro-women, they are for the death of the unborn. It has taken 40 years to point that out. It's taken 40 years for them to talk themselves into a hole. Because at first they were talking about liberating women. And when we took that away, when pro-lifers took that argument away, they began to say anything. And it's taken 40 years for us to hear it all. In the providence of God, it has taken 40 years. I don't like it. I think it would be better if Roe v. Wade were never passed in the way. I believe that it should have been thrown out because the premise of the case was wrong. But here we are. You can't change what happened 40 years ago. But now that we have had the public dialogue to evaluate the pros and cons, the fallacious arguments for abortion, everybody knows the truth. There is nobody with an excuse. Pro-abortionists especially don't have any excuse. Their arguments are like paper. They have been crumpled up, burned up, tossed away. None of them can hold any water. There is no adequate reason based on the convenience of the woman, the choice of the woman, the lifestyle of the woman to justify the death of human beings before they have ever even been born. There's no justification for the death of innocent human beings after they're born. Why would there be any justification for innocent humans before they're born? So back to the Time article. They've been losing ever since is the biggest, or isn't like the biggest words on the page, on the cover. And I want you to hear kind of how Time Magazine's article writer had put it. So I'm going to play this video. And you're going to hear this audio about them talking about it.
This January is the 30th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, which was a Supreme Court decision that legalized abortion in America. It might surprise some people to know that in the 30 years since that decision, the pro-choice movement has lost a lot of ground. Here's what you need to know. It might seem as though the re-election of Barack Obama and a lot of Democrats back to the Senate might indicate that the pro-choice movement is actually on a winning trajectory right now. But actually, abortion policy in America is primarily governed at the state level, and this is where pro-life advocates have been really successful. They've pushed for passage of a lot of state laws that limit access to abortion through waiting periods, parental notification laws, ultrasound laws, and also specialized zoning rules that abortion clinics have to follow. Another problem that the pro-choice movement has is that it's in the midst of a generational fight. A lot of the women that run the feminist and pro-choice legacy organizations in America are baby boomers who were around when Roe v. Wade was decided. And right now, there are a lot of millennial activists in their 20s and some in their 30s that are fighting for power of these organizations, and it's created tension within the movement. Probably the most daunting challenge that the pro-choice movement faces is that public opinion about abortion has shifted over the last 40 years. About three-quarters of Americans believe abortion should be legal in some or all circumstances. People have a more nuanced view of abortion itself. This has a lot to do with the widespread use of prenatal ultrasound, as well as neonatology, which has made huge advances in saving the lives of babies born prematurely. And this has changed the way Americans feel about unfettered access to abortion. Americans generally believe that abortion should be legal, but that it should be limited and regulated. The pro-choice movement hasn't really done a good job of adapting to this shifting public opinion, and that's left it kind of stranded in the past.
All right. So this is just a huge admission by a fairly liberal magazine. To analyze this kind of in a neutral way, as journalists should. They're not always neutral, we know that. But to analyze why the pro-choice movement, pro-abortion movement, has lost a lot of ground in trying to keep abortion legal. Why? Now, the video underscored the fact that most pro-choice women, pro-abortion women, are baby boomers. Those older than 45, those close to retirement age right now, and those who are younger than 45, have shifted strongly in the pro-life direction. And it's an age gap that I don't think the video talks about so much, as, you know, and doesn't analyze the reason why that is. But I'll tell you the reason why. Most of us, pro-life activists, you can call me an activist if you want to, most of us pro-life people of conscience have been born after 1973. And why is that important? It's because we understand, as children of legal abortion, that our lives in this country were never sacred from the moment of conception. We understand from science that existed before 1973 that life is a continuum from conception through birth, through life, through till natural death. Birth is just a transitional stage. Coming in the womb, developing in the womb, to developing outside the womb. Our education has taught us that we are people. We have rights. We have, if nothing else, the right to life, upon which all other rights afforded by our legal system are based. So when Roe v. Wade made abortion legal, It prevented states from making abortion illegal. The implication for all of us living today is that we are lucky. We are the lucky ones, and we fundamentally still do not have the right to life. We are here on the good graces and the convenience and the choice of another person, namely the women who gave birth to us. Regardless of their intentions, whether they wanted us or not, each and every one of our lives, born after 1973 in the United States of America, is, on the fundamental level, disposable. Disposable. There was a time in our lives where we did not have any rights. We did not have the right to exist, even though we existed. And how that doesn't undermine all the rest of our lives and our rights after we're born is a ridiculous grasping and clawing at significance that pro-choice mothers try to give their daughters but can't. There is no significance in life if the only reason you exist on this planet is because somebody let you live. There is nothing anyone can say to make up for that disgusting reality that were it for not preference, mere preference, you as an individual, I as an individual, any one of us in particular as an individual, our lives could have just been snuffed out, ripped up and torn apart, saline injected, or late-term abortion, or having our brains sucked out of our heads. There's nothing standing in the way of that. So why do a majority of young pro-life activists, why is there such an age gap? That is why. You can't talk about rights without talking about the rights of life. And you can't ignore it anymore. The generation that has survived abortion is now going to control the dialogue. And the baby boomer-aged pro-choice feminists are losing ground because they took away the fundamental right to life. They don't even have a fundamental right to life. How can they have any credibility to talk about any type of rights, reproductive rights, of all things? Of all things! The irony should be screaming out to America, you don't have a right to reproduce if you don't have a right to live. Be alive, to reproduce. So, Time Magazine didn't talk about that. But I thought I'd point that out because it seems to baffle a lot of pro-choice feminists. I think I read just earlier this week where they are baffled. They have been for several years, for the last 10 years. Oh my goodness, they say. All these pro-life activists, they're all so young and they're women. Well, duh! So the magazine article from Time contains an excerpt from Emily Buchanan, who is from Susan B. Anthony list. And she talks about the pro-life and pro-choice movements with respect to feminism And she makes a stark contrast that I think everybody needs to hear. I don't think it's been talked about enough. So it starts about talking about the early feminists that we all look up to as strong women who campaigned for women's suffrage: Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Alice Paul, Charlotte Lozier, and a lot of others who just wanted women to be equal in society with the right to vote in particular. So these women are called the original feminists. Understood that the rights of women cannot be built on the broken backs of unborn children, writes Buchanan. Susan B. Anthony called abortion child murder, and she was right. Alice Paul, the author of the original 1923 Equal Rights Amendment, said that, quote, abortion is the ultimate exploitation of women, end quote. I would agree with that. So the pro-life movement hasn't changed the meaning of feminism, Buchanan writes, as has been suggested. It was the neo-feminists of the 1960s and 70s who asked women to prize abortion as the pathway to equality. And they still say that. No, I'm saying this. The women who were the feminists of the 60s and 70s still say abortion is the pathway to equality. Our Supreme Court Justice, as I mentioned earlier, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, says that abortion is the pathway to equality for women. And that's why Roe v. Wade is still valid law. Buchanan goes on to write, pro-life feminism has captivated a new generation of young women who reject the illusion that to be pro-woman is to be pro-choice. Gallup polling showed that among 18 to 29-year-olds, there was a 5% increase in those labeling themselves pro-life between 2007 and 2008 and 2009 and 2010. I would echo those sentiments that you don't have to be pro-choice, pro-abortion, to be a pro-woman. After all, I'm a woman. I'm pro-woman. To say that I'm not is completely flat-out false because I'm a woman. You're a woman. I'm a woman. To be pro-woman is to be pro-myself, is to be pro-life, is to advocate for the lives of other women. And over 50% of people that are aborted globally, over 50% are females. If you are pro-woman, this should bother you terribly. If you are pro-woman, you should understand that abortion is the tool that has been used to reduce the number of women and to kill women by the millions around the world. And you can't support that and be pro-woman. And when America understands the inconsistency between abortion and conscience, and abortion and rights and freedom and all those things, abortion will end. Which brings us to the third question that I want to talk about. I've heard so many people on this show, outside of the show, on our Facebook page, in the chat room, etc., that tell me you can't and won't end abortion. Well, what does that statement really mean? I don't. Let me wager to answer that. What does that mean? That pro-lifers can't or won't end abortion, especially here in America. Well, it means that we will never be able to stop the practice of abortion everywhere, in every alley, in every abortion clinic, in every doctor's office, or any home, or anywhere in America. Well, that's true. We can't stop somebody from obtaining an abortion if a woman is determined to get one. We go back to pre-1973, where a woman could still obtain an abortion from a doctor who was willing to perform it. There's no difference between pre-1972 and 1973 and 2013. So if we were to abolish legal abortion in 2014, let's just say, there would be no difference between abortion as it is practiced in 2013 versus 2014. Yes, women will still be trying to obtain abortions somewhere in the country. But the point of being pro-life isn't to abolish people from obtaining abortions any more than laws prohibiting murder stop people from murdering. So those of you who say that, oh, you can't end abortion, you won't end abortion in America, so, you know, so what? So we're not, why not even, so don't fight for the overturning of Roe v. Wade? So don't make don't campaign for outlawing abortion? Does that even make any sense? Why don't we, in parallel, why don't we legalize murder for everyone? If we legalize murder, then, you know, people would stop going to jail for it. But as it is, murder is illegal, but people still commit murder. No. Making murder illegal in this country has not ended murder. But the point is that legalized murder should never be allowed in any country because it's wrong. You take the life, a person who takes the life of another person should not suffer no consequences from the law. And that's what we want. As a pro-life person, I want the law to recognize that somebody has been harmed and killed as a result of abortion, and that abortion should not be legal for that reason. Murder is the killing of an innocent human being. Abortion is the killing of an innocent human being. If murder is illegal, why not abortion? You cannot categorize it in a different way just to keep it legal. There is no precedent for that. There is no legal argument that will pass the test for that, except for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who just says abortion is necessary to make women equal in society. Really? I'm not equal unless I have abortion? I thought I was born equal. I thought the Constitution and all its amendments makes me legal in front of the eyes of the law. Why do we need abortion to make me legal? Like, I'm not equal. I'm sorry, equal. I'm not equal without it? Am I deficient without it? Are all women deficient without legal abortion? And for that matter, how does the legality of abortion change the status of women at all? Does it make you smarter? Does it make you better? Does it make you more successful at work? Are you able to pursue the things in life because abortion is legal that you otherwise wouldn't if abortion were illegal? As those people have said, we can't end abortion in America. That may be true, and I said that. But if abortion makes women equal in society, whether it's legal or not, doesn't matter. If a woman thinks that obtaining an abortion makes her equal to a man in the workforce, then she can obtain one, whether it's legal or not. Whether it's illegal, she can get an illegal abortion to maintain her equality in life. Simple as that. If it's the medical procedure of killing an unborn child, evacuating that child from the womb, that makes a woman equal to a man, then legal or not legal, that's what makes her equal to a man. I don't see where the legality of it makes any difference whatsoever. So no, I can't end abortion. I can't stop all abortions in America. But I can stop abortionists from getting money for it and declaring it as part of their income to their bank. They may not declare it to the IRS, but they do to their banks. I can stop abortionists from providing abortions so freely, so easily, and so legally. And as a result, a lot of Planned Parenthood clinics, a lot of abortion mills will close. Because all they really do is kill the unborn. They don't provide a valuable service to the health of anyone. Women can get health services at legitimate clinics. They can get help at pregnancy centers, which provide more than just some surgical tools inserted into your vagina to take care of your problem. They provide actual help. So, can I end abortion in this country? I can end the legality of abortion in this country. And that's a start. With 40 years behind us, the abortion arguments, the pro-abortion arguments are losing, if not completely lost. They were lost from the very beginning. But it is now simply being, has come to fruition where people understand. People feel that it is personal to them. And life, their own lives, are vulnerable to abortion. And that's why. It's just one of the reasons why abortion, the pro-abortion lobby in America, lobbying for the hearts and minds of Americans, is losing. It's losing. 51%, as of 2010, 51% of Americans consider themselves pro-life. So abortion is kept legal by force, by political force. So that is why Roe v. Wade has to be overturned. If not by overturning Roe v. Wade itself, by other legal means. Because when the conscience of America matches the state of abortion, or I should say the state of abortion, legal abortion matches the conscience of America, we will have progress. We will have equality. All those of you who pound the gavel, pound your chests, pound the table about equality in America and all these other superfluous areas such as marriage and race and marriage and all those things, they have their own separate arguments for them. But when you try to unify them and then leave out abortion, it is a stark omission. There is no other equality in America that can be obtained if you don't first have equality of life. If you don't have the right to exist, you don't have the right to anything else. So with that, it is 6 o'clock, and I promised a short show, and I live up to that promise. So all of you, next week we will have a fantastic show. Sometime in January we will celebrate the one-year anniversary of Pro Life Fridays Radio. And I will try to round up the gang together. We will do this thing, and we will have a smashing good show. And we will take down every argument that the pro-abortion side has put up in the last 40 years. And we will take it apart and just expose them for the weak lies and the false promises that they have told to women for the last 40 years. We will finally liberate women by first liberating your mind and your conscience. Join us in the next few weeks. We've got great guests, and I hope to see you then. Hopefully, we'll get the gang back together, maybe just for one awesome show. Join us then. It will be next Friday, 5 p.m. Central Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great night, and I will talk to you again next time.